Welcome to ACC Nation. On board, Will Ochanan, and I'm Jim Quist. Last episode, we looked at how ACC football had become a bit of a train wreck. We're not too far off those frequently traveled tracks once again. Syracuse went into Death Valley and played the Grim Reaper for far too many minutes to let Clemson off the hook in the AP Top 25, down one notch to number four and dropping two places in the coaches poll from two to four. The Tigers are tempting playoff fate. Is this a top five team? We're going to ask Will that here in just a moment. Clemson still holds onto the top spot in the ACC Nation Power Poll, but this week it is not a lock. It is by the narrowest of margins. And we'll tell you who number two is and number three in just a few moments. Coming up very, very soon, we'll be having a variety of guests to not only talk about football as we start getting a little closer to who probably is going to be headed into bowl action and we hope playoff action. We'll see how that works out. We're also going to be jumping on the basketball bandwagon. We've got some folks lined up for that and got some other sports, non-football and basketball people who are going to be coming in and joining us here in a couple of months and really looking forward to that. Should be very interesting. So let's jump into this week's schedule and peel back the Tupperware lid to unleash the opinions. Let's start, Will, with Miami rolling over North Carolina. Is it really all that needs to be said, or do you have something you want to throw in there to make it sound flowery?
Well, I don't know if I'm going to make it sound flowery, but I am going to sound the alarm about Miami from this instance. North Carolina shredded them on the ground in that game, and it wasn't just when the game was out of reach. They were doing this throughout the game. They were getting North Carolina was getting whatever they wanted in the running game. It's just when they went back to pass, it usually ended in disaster, whether it be a strip sack or with Chess Surratt completing almost as many passes to Miami as he did his own team. But there are issues with North Carolina. And I look at the game of Virginia in a couple of weeks. And if any of you follow me on Twitter, I mentioned, well, and I've said this for a while, I think Virginia gets Miami in a couple of weeks because Miami's coming off of the Florida State game. Virginia has a bye week to prepare. Virginia's strong suit is the run game. North Carolina averaged over 5 yards per carry against Miami. And if you take away Nathan Elliott's six carries for minus 25 yards, North Carolina's averaging over 7 yards a carry. That's a big concern to me.
It should be, especially if you were a coach. So you're saying Virginia is going to be a trap game?
Oh yeah, Virginia's the perfect letdown spot for Miami after coming off of they will be coming off the Florida State game.
That should be interesting. That game, we'll talk about that here in just a few moments. That's something to put away. I would say take what Will just said and put it in the back of your mind. And start watching, especially after this week. See what happens. You may have really hit it on the head there, Will. We'll see how it all rolls out. Boston College put up the points on Temple, but what is going on with their defense? You said last week that they failed to put the offense on the plane in Chestnut Hill. Well, I think they forgot the defense this week.
They have been susceptible to the run at times, and this was true in this game. Temple's leading rusher, Raquel Armstead, went up for 171 yards. And over the span of this season, there have been points where Boston College has been beaten against the run, and it wasn't just in this game. Holy Cross got them for like 4.5 yards per carry. Wake Forest averaged almost 5 yards per carry against them. Right now, Boston College is 10th in the league in the ACC in rushing defense. And it's a little skewed because, you know, they played UMass, and we all know, you know, UMass is a dumpster fire. Their coach got suspended for saying something he shouldn't have. The Purdue game, that one is kind of a statistical outlier at this point. But, I mean, they shredded him in the past game, though. But I think there is some concern with Boston College's defense. And yeah, they obviously, we can see they can score. You look at some of their point totals throughout the year. Obviously, it helps. You know, A.J. Dillon is in the backfield, and they had a great great game from Ben Glines, who had 120 yards rushing in this game. Anthony Brown struggled, though, 15 of 33 passing. That's a concern. He had a good start to the year. Obviously, a little rough in this game. Maybe he was coming back down to earth for a little bit, but his last two games, he's been under 50% completion. So maybe there's a little something. You know, he's still got to make some more adjustments in his game, but you know, there's still ways to go in the season. So I think as long as with his development and in just handing the ball off to A.J. Dillon, whenever anything fails, that's always a good option too.
Pound the rock, go with A.J. Always a good option. Well, we're going to find out here. We're going to talk a little bit about BC and NC State here in just a moment. You had raised a red flag about NC State's running game. We'll talk about that here in just a few moments because I think they may have found it, but we'll see what your thoughts are on that. Let's get into some serious discussion here. Syracuse, let's just be blunt about this. They took it to Clemson. You can make all the excuses you want about this game. None of them hold water, simply said and put. Syracuse is not that bad of a team. That's one, okay? Let's not make any excuses here one way or the other. Let's not make any excuses about, oh, we didn't have our starting quarterback. Yeah, you did. You had your starting quarterback. And guess what? The guy that you had starting the week before, who basically said, I don't want to play for you anymore, and your replacement, who is now your starter, gets bumped. It happens. That's what football is all about. And the guy that came in didn't do such a bad job. But in this game overall, Will, I was quite staggered by what Clemson wasn't able to do and what Syracuse was doing. That game says an awful lot to me about why Clemson dropped in both polls.
Yeah, I agree. They dropped to 4, I believe, this week, and I think that's a fair spot to put them because they're obviously, well, Alabama's in their own little zip code right now, and Georgia and Ohio State certainly deserve to be ahead of them. I would put Clemson right at 4 too. I think the polls are right on with that. And as far as this game goes, I like to look at things from a statistical standpoint, try to figure out, okay, why did this team do this? And why did this team fail to do this? I have no explanation for what it is that Syracuse the last 2 years of, have handed it to Clemson in one way or another. Maybe Dino Babers just has something that they just cannot stop. I don't know what it is, but you got to give them major credit for what they did in this game. I think the point spread coming into this game was something like 24.5 points, and I thought that was just way too high. We've seen Syracuse is a much improved team this year. I will admit, I do expect a little bit of a regression coming because one of the league leaders in turnover caused this year, and I've harped on this with Miami that kind of level off at some point. Mm-hmm. Right now, Syracuse is in a three-way tie with Miami, and I'll get to Miami, that stat in just a minute, and Boston College with 12 turnovers gained. That could be a little misleading because you can't rely on turnovers to always help you in ball games. I mean, they did have a couple turnovers here, and it helped. Yeah, obviously, what really came down to it is, Chase Bryce coming in and just having some onions late in the game. There was the fourth down throw he hit for the first down, and when they needed him, Travis Etienne showed up and had one of the best games of his career, rushing for over 200 yards and 3 touchdowns. He's been kind of splitting the load a little bit, over the course of the season, but this is the game where he kind of became the bell cow back, and they needed everything for him. And, props to him for that. Props to Syracuse for, being super competitive and doing everything they could to win that game. It's just, It's hard to go into Death Valley and steal a win. Let's be real here.
And boy, that would have been one heck of a grand theft there.
Something
conspiracy theorists can work out. I didn't pull my box of aluminum foil out. I probably should have, because I could have gone off on a real tangent here. Both the head coaches, their names start with a D, and they're four letters, and they're unusual names. So let's start the conspiracy theories about what that means in the whole context of these two teams getting together. That means nothing.
Dino is an uncommon name.
Yes.
I mean, I could think of more Dinos than Dabos. I think of Dino from the Flintstones. True. There was former WWF wrestler Dino Bravo.
Wait a minute. You started with the Flintstones. Say what now?
Hey, I watched them when I was a kid, too, when they were in syndication.
In syndication. Okay, so you weren't around for the originals like me. Okay, that's a good thing.
No.
That's a good thing, because it was black and white when it started out. very few people know that. Let's go on to the next one here. Let's talk about Georgia Tech blasting Bowling Green. Not as if we didn't expect this. This is something that Georgia Tech really needed. They needed something to boost themselves. I think there was a lot of pressure based upon everything that I've been reading, especially in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, a lot of pressure being put on Paul Johnson for this lackluster season. And their AD is basically supporting him. But, clock's ticking, dude. That's all I'm saying. You got to do something down there. You've got to turn the corner. It's not going to happen this year. I just don't see it. Yep. But anyway, your thoughts on
shouts,
the game?
Shouts to a friend of the show, Ken Segura, because obviously he does outstanding work for covering Georgia Tech. But this is exactly something Georgia Tech needed. All the ingredients were there. A team that needed a win against just a really bad team who's in Bowling Green, whose lone win was a shootout win over an FCS school in Eastern Kentucky. This was a game that Georgia Tech basically just started off just running and just doing whatever they wanted, averaging almost 8 yards per carry against Bowling Green. And this is one of those rare games where Taquan Marshall looked like a competent passer. 5 of 6 passing, that's quite the accomplishment for a Georgia Tech quarterback. I think the thing that was interesting to me was of the 49 carries, only Marshall was the only one to have double-digit carries. Everyone else, there was a couple of guys had 7 carries. Tobias Oliver had 115 yards with those 7 carries. He was the leading rusher. This is the kind of game that where you're going to see a lot of different players come in and take snaps in the A back or B back position and get a carry or two just to get them some reps. And obviously, with the new redshirt rule, this is the perfect opportunity to do that.
Yellow Jackets have been historically kind of a slow starter. And I think it's a lot of people getting in sync on offense, especially defense. I don't think the defense has ever been spectacular or really anything to write home about.
Yeah, I thought it'd be a little bit better this year, but it's kind of disappointed me in that sense.
I don't know what the problem there. NC State didn't have a cakewalk, but they did get a win over Virginia. And both of these teams, as we've talked before, showing so much potential. And this was an entertaining game on multiple levels. And I think NC State finally found the running game against Virginia.
Yeah, Ricky Person Jr., who had not played since the opening game against JMU, Virginia had no answer for him. 108 yards on 14 carries. It's almost as if Virginia obviously didn't expect much out of him, because Reggie Gillespie's been the guy. And, sprinkle in a little Brady Bodine. But, Gillespie wasn't that good. He still averaged only 3 yards, a little over 3 yards a carry. Did have a rushing touchdown. But if you look at the running games for both teams, I think this is the exact reason why NC State won and Virginia lost. You have, like I say, Person had averaged 7 yards a carry. The team is as a whole averaged 4.5 yards per carry, which was a season high, along with 176 yards on the ground. Meanwhile, Jordan Ellis and Bryce Perkins combined to average 2 yards per carry. Whatever NC State did in their game plan, it really worked to stop Virginia's running game. They did really well. I mean, Perkins did have a nice run at one point. I think he got picked up like 20 yards out of it. They did a couple of plays to Olamide Zaccheaus, and he picked up a couple of runs for 39 yards. And Perkins threw the ball fairly well. I know he had 2 interceptions. One was his fault because he threw it out route a little too late, and the NC State defender read it and picked it off. But the last interception was at the NC State 5-yard line with a minute left to try to make it a 7-point game. But he showed a lot of why he is such a dynamic playmaker, and why Virginia will be a lot better on the field this year than a lot of people expected. And the reason why I think they have a shot against Miami in 2 weeks.
They keep getting better. You can see that progress coming. So that's a plus. And that's something that everybody should be very excited about if you're a Virginia fan. Let's talk about something you shouldn't be excited about if you're a Panther fan. Oh, gosh. Really. Pitt just didn't have anything to keep UCF at bay. Of course, it's not really too surprising. UCF, much better team. But I talked about Pat Narduzzi being on the hot seat. I really think that, you know, he's still there. But actually this week, and we'll get to it in just a minute, I think he's been replaced, who's on the hottest of hot seats. But, that whole program there showed or had so much promise, potential, when he came in. And it just hasn't developed.
Yeah, it's weird. You know, he showed so much promise as a coordinator at Michigan State. And you figure a place like Pitt, where you can get some players in there, and you can run one of those almost, that'd be a perfect spot for like running a Big Ten type of offense, where you just get a bunch of big beefy offensive linemen and just ground and pound and play stout defense, but neither has really happened. No. I mean, they did run the ball, well when James Conner was there, but they haven't had a consistent back since. But in fairness as well, UCF has one of the best quarterbacks in the country, Mackenzie Milton, who basically looked the part in this game, threw for 4 touchdown passes, ran for 2 more. It's hard to stop someone when he combines for 6 touchdowns. But yeah, there are a lot of issues in Pitt, and I don't foresee them getting stopped anytime soon.
I think that's going to be resolved at the end of the season, as you pointed out. I don't ACC schools are not the type typically to let somebody get, well, even though Wake Forest let go their defensive coordinator, but typically ACC schools don't let people go in the middle of a season. That's pretty odd. Pat Narduzzi, I don't see him being around next year. Frankly, I expected a high score from Wake Forest, but not from Rice. So that tells me that there are some issues with, even though you got rid of the defensive coordinator, there's still problems with the Demon Deacons D.
Well, in fairness, this the 24 points Rice scored is kind of in line with what they've been doing all season. The amount they gave up is also in line with what they've given up through the season. Mm-hmm. It's a season high, but they've given up over 40 points in their other three losses. They barely beat Prairie View A&M in their opener. That shows you just how bad they've been. I think they were 118th in total defense after this game. And Sam Hartman was 15 of 17, threw 4 touchdown passes. They got Kendall Hinton in a couple snaps at quarterback. What can we say about Greg Dortch? I mean, he's
a great player.
So good. Yeah, he's so good. 11 catches, 163 yards, 4 touchdowns. I mean, there is not a better receiver in the league as far as I'm concerned.
I would agree. Let's go to our next matchup between Florida State and Louisville. Beginning of the season, you go, oh, this is going to be an exciting game. It's going to be fun. On a kind of weird level, it was because of how close it was. Xavion, in his article at accnation.net, says that Willie Taggart is gone in 3 years. I'm beginning to think Bobby Petrino is gone at the end of this season. What do you think of that?
He might be right about Bobby Petrino. I think he's going to stick around a little bit longer, but I think Willie Taggart's going to have more time than that. The problem is, you know, he always comes into these situations and it's always rough in the first year. Look at his coaching career. Western Kentucky, when he took over in 2010, his first year, they were 2-10. The next 2 years, they were 7-win teams. Took over South Florida in 2013. Again, they were 2-10. And by the time he left in 2016, they were a 10-win team. It takes some time to build up a program. And anybody who watches Florida State football knows that offensive line is a train wreck. Louisville's had trouble getting to the quarterback at times this year. They got 4 sacks on DeAndre Francois. Yeah, Cam Akers averaged 2.5 yards per carry. This is stuff that you would normally not expect. That offensive line is not protecting anybody. Francois still found a way to throw for 294 yards and 4 touchdowns. The problem is like you said, Louisville is just a big cluster bleep, and they went back for some reason. They went back to Juwan Pass at the this game, and he played the whole game. It was all right. I mean, 24-45, 306 yards. That's season highs in yards. But you know, they actually had a decent running game. But the problem was, I think there was some weird. I don't know the exact score, but they were. I'm trying to think. It was a pickoff or something like that. Yeah. Louisville was up 3 with the ball at FSU's 21-yard line, and for some reason, they called a pass play and it was intercepted, and FSU scored to give them the win. Just weird stuff. That's definitely on Petrino and the offensive staff for calling a pass play in a situation like that.
Yeah,
That's borderline inexcusable.
Yeah, and especially for an experienced coach, that makes no sense. You sit there and you scratch your head. You pound the ball. Let's move on to the next one, Virginia Tech. Well, the Hokies get to wipe a whole lot of pie off of their face because they pulled off a pretty decent. Well, I don't know that I would call it an upset, even though Duke was ranked. I have a hard time calling it an upset, but Virginia Tech got their win, and of course it dropped Duke like 20 positions out of the top 25, which was, to me, says that they shouldn't have been in the top 25. Tech is back in the top 25. So thoughts on that game?
Well, I guess you could consider it an upset when you factor in the circumstances of, you know, Virginia Tech coming off the ODU loss, losing their starting quarterback, their best defensive player getting kicked off the team. And they just hummed right along, at least offensively. I watched the first half of this game, and the thing that stood out to me, though, was, you know, Daniel Jones just did not look like he should have been in that ball game. His timing was off, just all sorts of weird. And I don't know why he even came back in this game after, you know, being only out for 3 weeks with that broken clavicle. Mm-hmm. And especially since Duke has a bye week this upcoming week, what was the point of even trying to rush him back? Quentin Harris was doing just fine as quarterback of this team.
Agree.
I mean, I thought they brought him back unnecessarily early. I don't know if it would have made a difference in this game, but you know, they might have fared better, but who knows? I mean, they still didn't run the ball very well. They averaged 2 yards per carry. I mean, neither team ran the ball well in this game because Virginia Tech averaged 2 yards per carry as well. It was all in the passing game. And they say Ryan Willis threw for 332 yards and 3 touchdowns. And he was hitting a lot of long passes in this game. If you look at the receivers, the top five receivers, all had a reception of at least 24 yards. And that just tells you they were just getting behind the Duke secondary and just smoking them.
Yeah, that's the that game. To me, the running games, like you said, I just am nonplussed about both teams from that perspective. Daniel Jones coming back this early after that sort of injury, you know, and I realize that sometimes people can heal quickly, and he's been kind of practicing, and I just thought it was way too early, and I think it showed too. I think it was a bad move. At the very least, you should have pulled him maybe after a quarter, sitting for a while, and then, you know, if you want to, put him back in toward the end of the game or something. I don't know. That's Cutcliffe is far better coach than I'll ever even pretend to be. So that was his decision, and go with it. Notre Dame absolutely rolled over Stanford. Lots of progression there. The Irish are closing in on the top five. They're going to be pushing Clemson for that playoff spot. So I thought the D looked really good. Offense still a work in progress, but the defense looked good.
I expected Stanford to have a little bit of a letdown factor here after the emotional game against Oregon the week before, and I thought it showed here. I mean, not to discredit Notre Dame's work on defense, but I expected Notre Dame to win pretty handily in this game, and obviously they did. Ian Book, you know, another strong game with 278 yards and four touchdowns. Still makes you wonder why Brian Kelly went with Brandon Winbush as long as he did. He's looking silly for not keeping him as a starter, you know, maybe going into the season, but. You know, the Irish has really, really got a good contribution from Dexter Williams on the ground. This was his first game of the year, and he went for 161 yards. Pretty strong effort there. And holding Bryce Love to 73 yards was a pretty impressive job by Notre Dame's defense. And you know, they were you know, pretty good. They got to they sacked Jerry Tillery in particular, had four sacks in this game. And the team had five in total. But when you have a guy like that wreaking that much havoc on the quarterback, it was a pretty all-around impressive beat down by Notre Dame.
So this week, let's take a look at what's coming up. Some exciting matchups. Georgia Tech at Louisville. Whoever ends up with ugly on their face gets a Roman Coliseum thumbs down. Time to unleash the Lions. Georgia Tech and Louisville. Yeah. Maybe we should just pass that and go on to the next matchup. I don't know, man.
Are we sure?
Yeah, let's just pass that one. Just this time we'll just, it doesn't exist. Boston College at NC State. Now this could be a battle.
It's like we're getting somewhere here. This is probably, honestly, you could argue this is probably the second best game of the week, depending on how you feel about Florida State, Miami. But you've got, you know, NC State, they're 4-0. They're in the rankings. Brian Finley is obviously really good. And then you got Boston College, who obviously has A.J. Dillon running the football. And you know, maybe if they give Person more carries, NC State does, and maybe if he succeeds again like he did against Virginia, then that just adds another dimension to this offense that just makes them ever more dangerous.
Next up, a trap game. Maybe Clemson at Wake Forest?
Yeah, in Wake. Their offense is looking really good. But, you know, they have defensive issues, and who knows what's going to happen. We haven't heard anything about Trevor Lawrence's condition yet. And obviously in the concussion protocol, who knows what's going to happen there. But, you know, I'd be interested to see what Wake can do with in the air against Clemson, because they can be beating us a pass. It'd be interesting. I would like to see what Greg Dortch can do. I think he could be in line for a pretty big game here, but they got to do. They're going to have to do more elsewhere in this game. I mean, I think Clemson will win, but you know, I guess it all depends on who's starting a quarterback as to how much.
All right, up next is that FSU Miami game you were talking about. Fun because it's a rivalry, an upset. Oh my gosh. FSU fans would be crowing about that for years. They'd be in, well, they're already insufferable at points. of course, Miami fans are too. But, boy, I just made a lot of friends in Florida. But anyway, this ought to be a really fun game. And I'm hoping, I literally am crossing my fingers, that FSU finds something here, just the competitive nature of that team, and they really give Miami a run for the money. I'm not saying I want either team to win. That's not where I'm coming from. I'm just saying I want to make this a game. I want this to be the type of game that people in the state of Florida expect and deserve from their two teams. So,
fine with me. I like an emotional game. Make my call of Virginia beating Miami in 2 weeks even more fitting. But
indeed,
I do expect Miami to win this game just because, well, simply they are the much better team right now. But mm-hmm. I mean, would it surprise me if Florida State was game for a while? Sure. I mean, it's a rivalry game.
Right.
Anything can happen. You know, I've seen the Commonwealth Cup. You know, I mean, obviously Virginia Tech's won the game for the past, you know, 14 years, but there have been years where Virginia's been really bad and Virginia Tech's been really good and Virginia's been in and had chances to win it, but because of poor coaching or something like that, they lose. But weird things can happen in rivalry games, is all I'm saying.
Let's talk about a really potentially big game here, Notre Dame at Virginia Tech. This could be home field advantage at play. Definitely for the Hokies. Notre Dame is in a position here where they, you know, they're coming off a big win over Stanford and hard to keep up that level. And traveling to Blacksburg is going to be an experience for them.
Yeah, Saturday, a night game in Blacksburg with a top 10 team, a borderline top 5 team. Coming in, that's going to be a lot of craziness in Blacksburg Saturday night. This is going to be a good game. I think now we are pretty sure what happened against ODU was an anomaly, and you know maybe they aren't that bad, and you know maybe they aren't as good as they were last week against Duke, but you mentioned it. Maybe there is a little bit of a letdown spot for Notre Dame after the Stanford game, because that is one of their, you know, one of their many rivals over the years. Would I be surprised if Virginia Tech won this game? No. I mean, we've talked about this back when we had Matthew from All Sports Discussion on the podcast back in the summer. And I think both he and Xavion agreed that Virginia Tech was going to win this game. But obviously, circumstances have changed since then. Notre Dame has looked like a much, much better team than we all expected them to be, at least those of us here at ACC Nation. But I was with them up until these last couple of weeks when Ian Book has started to, you know, show he is the better quarterback.
That should be a fun game, and looking forward to that. That's coming up. Another exceptionally busy week of sports. We've got it covered at accnation.net. The guys, they're on Twitter. Will is at Will's World MN. Xavion at XAYDEON. And I'm at ACCTheQ. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube at ACC Nation. On Facebook at ACC Nation Sports. Until next time.